from 6 on 2FM.
Thanks to the two Johnnies, it's Wednesday, October 5th, and this is Game On. Coming up on the show, we'll be chatting all things Champions League with Keith Tracy. Gavin Casey will bring us up to speed on the controversy surrounding the upcoming Ben Eubank Jr. fight. If you want to get in touch, please text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Now it is Wednesday. Welcome along. We have a competition today. So all you FIFA fans will know that EA Sports FIFA 23 has officially launched worldwide and is available now on all gaming platforms. And for the first time ever, FIFA 23 will feature women's club teams from the Barclays Women's Super League and Division 1 Arkema, extending its position as the world's most authentic football experience. To celebrate its release, we have a copy of FIFA 23 to give away every day this week. All you have to do to be in with a chance to win today is answer the following question. Vera Pau is the manager of which international women's side? Text your answer, name, email address, and whether you want a PS5, PS4 or Xbox copy to 51552. As always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply. See 2FM for details. Now, I mentioned Vera Pau, and that brings us nicely along to the Republic of Ireland women's team. While they do have a crucial World Cup playoff game next week, they're not sure who they are going to be playing yet, but all will be revealed in the next day or so. A little bit earlier, Tony O'Donoghue, our soccer correspondent, went out to meet the Irish women's team. They met today in Dublin and are gearing up to travel to whichever country they end up going to, whether it be Austria or Scotland. Tony spoke to Anya O'Gorman out there and asked her what it was like to be gearing up for a game that she didn't know who it was going to be against. And she said, it is a little bit strange not knowing.
Yeah, look, it is a strange position to be in, but I suppose international football, you have to be adaptive. Some windows we come in, we play two games, and we won't look at our opposition until the first game's out of the way anyway. So it's a position we're used to being in, and we'll be focusing on ourselves and preparing and focusing on our own tasks.
Will you look at the game between Scotland and Austria?
Yes, definitely.
As a team, will you watch it together?
We'll watch it together on Thursday evening, and then we'll know our opponents, and it'll be full focus on us and the game ahead and the task ahead. And I'd like to reiterate again that we'll be just preparing like we do for every other game, to another 90 minutes of football, and it's one to look forward to.
But the prize, you could say it's World Cup weather. If you do make it to the World Cup, it'll be this sort of weather in Australia and New Zealand next year, probably.
Yeah, look, it's amazing. It's something we all dreamed of, I think, since I was a kid and everyone as a kid. And it's really great to be in the position we're in now. So we're another game away. And like I say, we'll do everything we can to be focused and ready for the game. We'll need the game for our lives. And no matter who we face, it's going to be a tough one.
Anya O'Gorman there speaking to Tony O'Donoghue. And Tony joins me now on the line. Tony, what is the mood like in the camp? No, we don't have Tony, so we're going to have to come back to him very, very shortly. We will take a very quick break now, though. We have plenty of football to get through, so do stay with us.
RTE 2FM. Live music on 2FM. I do my hair. Lizzo, the special tour. Live at 3 Arena, March 13th. With special guest Joy Crooks. Tickets available this Friday from Ticketmaster.ie. Lizzo live at 3 Arena. Tickets available this Friday.
Live music on 2FM.
At OnPost, we believe in giving you more power over how you bank. That's why AIB and Bank of Ireland customers can now lodge and withdraw money at any of our 900 post offices across Ireland 6 days a week. That's right, your bank is in your post office for personal and business banking alike, meaning you can bank wherever you live or work. Visit your local post office or onpost.com/everydaybanking. OnPost, your money for your world. Allied Irish Banks PLC and Bank of Ireland are regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
Today's €2.90 wrap of the day is the sweet chili chicken one, guaranteed to cause flavour envy. Picture a soft tortilla wrap filled with...
Ooh, delicious crispy or grilled chicken.
Sweet chili sauce too. I'm sold.
Today's €2.90 sweet chili chicken one. So big on flavour, everyone will want some. Only at McDonald's. From 11 a.m.
Love the dress you posted last night.
That old thing.
I picked it up last month on the Champs-Élysées.
With OnPost Mobile, you can humble brag to your heart's content. Get unlimited calls, texts, 50 gigs of data, your first month free, and the freedom of no contract for just €15 a month. Sign up today at your local post office or at onpost.com/mobile. OnPost Mobile, for your world. Fair usage and terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The Toy Show is the most magical night of the year. And now, for the first time ever, that magic is being brought to life on the theatre stage. This Christmas, step inside one little girl's Toy Show adventure as she and her family prepare for the biggest night of their lives. In a mischievous musical experience for the whole family.
RTE presents Toy Show the Musical, showing at the Convention Centre Dublin from December 10th. For more information, go to rte.ie/toyshowthemusical.
Game on 2FM. Welcome back to Game On with me, Marie Crowe. It is almost 6:10 and I'm delighted to say that we are joined now by Tony O'Donoghue, fresh from meeting the Ireland women's team today ahead of that crucial playoff game. And as I believe, Tony, you're out walking your dog.
I will be shortly, yeah. Now, I'm also down at the Greystones United under-12s training. So,
Trying to fit it all in,
yeah. The day started early out in Castleknock, though, where the Irish team are based. And today was media day, so got a chance to talk to not just Eoin O'Gorman, who you heard, but Jamie Finn, Lily Ag, Chloe Mustaki, Kira Carusa, and Niamh Fahey. And what Niamh and Eoin have in common, of course, is that they were involved, along with Louise Quinn, in the last time we were in a major playoff. That was a playoff for a place in the Euros 2009. It was played in 2008, and as they remember it, it was 1-1 in the first leg. That was at Richmond Park, and then they went to Reykjavik, to Iceland, on a pitch that was frozen solid, that they were literally trying to hammer the ice off it beforehand. But there was a TV commitment, it seemed. I mean, it's very hard to get TV pictures from that time. It's not that long ago, mm-hmm. but it's an indication, I guess, of the women's game wasn't really taken as seriously. And so there weren't pictures of that available. The game went ahead. They were beaten 3-0 by Iceland. A decent Iceland team, to be fair, but it's taken that long since players the likes of Anya or Niamh or Louise to get another opportunity. And what an opportunity it is, because, of course, they don't know who they're playing yet. They trained this afternoon. They had a team meeting after the media duties were done. And then I spoke to the media officer. They were just before we came on air to make sure everything is okay. They had their first proper training session tomorrow evening around this time after they have their dinner. They'll all sit down together and watch the Scotland against Austria game, because it's extraordinary, really. And not knowing your opponent, it'll be a one-off this time, not like the two-legged affair against Iceland in 2008. 90 minutes could decide it all, or it could be indeed extra time and penalties. But one tie will decide whether we go directly to the World Cup in Australia and New Zealand, if we're the two of the three best winners, or if we go indirectly to that convoluted inter-confederations. But of course, a win is essential. So we're waiting for Scotland and Austria tomorrow evening. And that's a game that I'm sure loads of Irish people will want to watch to see our potential opponents. There's Portugal-Belgium as well, and Wales and Bosnia, but we play the winners of Scotland and Austria. And so, you know, talking to the players as well, for their families, they're trying to decide, should we book in Airbnb in Vienna or Glasgow? Should we be booking flights? It's an extraordinary, and to me, it's not satisfactory. You know, we were the top seeds, and yet we lose revenue, I guess, by not having the game at home, and also miss whatever advantage comes with playing a home advantage. But luckily, this team has shown, away in Helsinki in particular, away in Gothenburg, in Slovakia as well, no fears for them travelling, and hopefully we are on the brink of something very special, on the brink of history.
It is frustrating, all right, for everybody involved, but they seem, from listening to Anya and any other interviews that have come out over the last few days, they seem kind of resigned to it now, and they're trying to focus on the positives. And that's really despite as well, Tony, the fact that they have been hit with some injuries too.
some injuries. It's terrible, really. Jessica Zhu stretchered off for West Ham at the weekend, and you know she had become very important to the team. So she joins Megan Connolly. I mean, absolutely, Megan Connolly was a nailed-on starter if she were fit. Ruscha Littlejohn, you could say the same. Leanne Kiernan, the last day when she came out against Slovakia, showed how dangerous she's becoming, and you know her form for Liverpool has been superb. Ellen Molloy came on and did well as well, but all of these injured added to the long-term injury list. Savannah McCarthy, Aoife Colville, any team in the world would suffer the loss of players as good as that. And so for Ireland, although they have shown great grit and determination, it's certainly a blow. There's no question about that. And either Austria or Scotland, ranked ahead of us, will be huge opponents.
Is it much of a muchness, Tony, or is there a preferred choice of opponent?
It depends, I guess, on the style of football you want to play. I think Scotland would probably play a more direct style, and maybe, you know, people might say, is it a more British style? Would that suit us more? But we have done well against the Continentals. I thought Austria were very good at the recent European Championships, and I think, frankly, they'd be a more dangerous opponent. But then, Hampden Park, you know, it'll be extraordinary if it is going to be Glasgow. There'll be Champions League games on in Glasgow around that time. Again, there may be a big Irish support getting over there. It's toss of a coin, really. So, but it is undoubtedly the biggest game that the Irish women's team has ever been involved in.
Absolutely, Tony. And we will have live commentary here on Game On. Thank you for that update. And no doubt we'll be checking in with you over the next few days. Enjoy the training and walking the dog and whatever else you have to do for the evening, Tony.
Take care. Cheers, guys.
Bye-bye. Now we are going to turn our attention to the Champions League. There are two games currently on at the moment. Celtic are trailing RB Leipzig 1-0. And it is nil all between RB Salzburg and Dinamo Zagreb. I am delighted to say now that Keith Tracy joins me on the line. Keith, we're going to start with last night's games. First up, Liverpool and their new 4-2-3-1 formation. Do you think it worked?
Yeah, I think it worked. I think Darwin Nunez up there is a real handful playing by himself. And because he's so strong and so quick, he can lead that line. He can rough people up as well. He can get physical. And when you've got the likes of Luis Diaz and Salah going to have the penetration in behind, I do think it'll work well. And with Liverpool's defensive frailties lately, I think having Henderson and Thiago in there just to mind the shop when the lads do go forward, I think is a better balance for them, because the rock and roll football they have been playing, we all love to watch it, but it does leave them very, very exposed when teams can break their press. And you see now with Van Dijk just at the coming off the boil as well, not handling them 1v1 situation as well as he usually does, Liverpool just looked that little bit fragile. But the change of formation, look, that will be harder test down the roads than Rangers at home in Anfield. So although Liverpool passed the test there, I do think there'll be a lot harder to come in the Champions League.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see if they stay with it. You'd think that they'll probably, now they know they can do it, they will probably revert and adapt then, depending on who they're playing, and keep other teams guessing too. I guess, look, one player I wanted to talk about as well was Mo Salah. He hasn't been the player that we saw over the last couple of seasons, and there's a huge amount of expectation on him anyway. Do you think now that he's going to improve, or he did look like an improved player last night, but do you think he's going to keep improving and that we will see him back to his best?
I hope so. I really hope so, because I think we all love watching Mo Salah at his brilliant best. But for whatever reason, maybe it's the amount of games he's played over the last couple of years. You know, maybe it's too simple to say, but I think losing Mane for Liverpool is a big, big deal, you know. And I know they're going to say he was in his last year of his contract, so they sold him to Bayern Munich for 30 million. 30 million in this current climate, when you're a top club like Liverpool, that's pretty much peanuts. And I believe Mane had, you know, maybe a year, maybe another 2 years as, you know, probably the best left winger we have, the best attacking left winger in the world, if not Europe. So for Liverpool to let him go, I'd have liked them just to be a little bit more ruthless and say, listen, you're staying for another year, we believe you have a year left. And I do think Salah has had a knock-on effect of that as well. You know, but I do think Darwin Nunez and Luis Diaz, I think Jota coming back as well, they will all start to lift the load and take the eye of other defenders, and then that will free up Salah. Because at the minute, I do think people are saying, if we can keep Diaz quiet, keep Salah quiet, Nunez has been in and out with his suspensions as well in the Premier League. So at the minute, it's, you know, they've been able to contain Liverpool. But like I say, with Diaz coming in, Nunez looks a real handful if he's going to be up there by himself. And I think that'll just free up Salah, you know, to getting more 1v1 situations and showing a bit more this season.
What about Trent Alexander-Arnold? Where do you sit on that whole saga? I've never seen anyone, well, not in the last couple of years anyway, divide opinion like him.
Yeah, look, I know people would say, you know, when he scored his free kick last night, an outstanding free kick, brilliant free kick, almost unsavable, but these are all things we already know about Trent. He's an outstanding fullback going forward. When you get him running backwards, he gets disinterested. He switches off. People can run behind him. People can run in, you know, in between the gaps in him, the centre half. It's just the same old question marks. And when you think about it in an England context, they've got Reece James, Kyle Walker, Kieran Trippier. You know, Kieran Trippier can score free kicks like that. He can put balls into the box as well can Reece James. So for me, England have that in abundance going forward. Even Kyle Walker could do that going forward. But with Gareth Southgate, he is a predominantly defensive manager, and I think he gets a little bit weary when England do go up against the biggest nations, the likes of your France. Can you imagine Mbappe having a run at Trent Alexander-Arnold, you know, when you get to the latter stages of the World Cup? It's, you know, you just don't trust him. You'd need a Kyle Walker out there with his pace. And for as good as he is going forward, he is outstanding. For me, his first job is to defend, and he just doesn't do that well enough. And I was listening to Gary Neville on Sky Sports talking about it and breaking it down, and he did say that he always thought his defensive frailties would come back to hurt him at some point in his career. And I do believe he's at a junction now where he'll either be known as a brilliant attacking fullback, and that's all he is. If he can add that defensive side to his game, even if it's 10%, 20%, you know, even Gary Neville put his hands up and said he's gone way beyond me as what I was as a right back in terms of his assists. If he can just defend that little bit more better, I think England would have, if not the best right back in the world, definitely one of them.
It's hard on him, isn't it? Because he does so many great things and he's under the spotlight so much. And just there's so much debate and focus on him to try and cope with all of that and have it on his young shoulders. Now, I know he's a Premier League player and he's playing for Liverpool and he's a great manager, but still, like, it is a difficult situation to be in for a young player.
Of course it is, but this is when you find out about your players. You know, like we said, the hardest part of the game Trent has, and he has it in abundance. He can play balls forward, he can get assist after assist, he can play balls into the channel, he can do all the pretty stuff. If he can just, you know, over the next couple of months, even if he doesn't make this the World Cup squad, which seems crazy to think that he may not, but given the strength that England have at right back, he may not make the England squad. But I would urge him just to get his head down and work on himself defensively, because, like you say, the hardest part of the game he's able to deal with. He can just figure out how to stay in games, even if he tells Van Dijk just to constantly speak to him, constantly get him in next to him, because, you know, we know he goes up forward and he's brilliant. He's really, really good forward. But sometimes it's, you know, he doesn't even sprint back. When he loses the ball, it's just an amble back and, you know, somebody else will win it. He can't think that recovery runs must be sprints. And for it, I know he's young and I know 90% of his game is excellent, but, you know, England want to win the World Cup. And if you want to win the World Cup, if any one of your chain in the back line is left wanting, it will be found out. So that's why Gareth Southgate just has them question marks over him still.
Yeah, and, like, to be fair, Klopp was doing his best last week just trying to explain the role that he's given him and the situation that he wants himself to get in, but then you know, it still wasn't working, and the Brighton game came and the focus stayed on him. But one thing Klopp said then after that was that he wants his defenders to get back to basics. Do you feel that they did enough of that last night, and do you think that there's still going to be frailties around their defence?
Yeah, I do think they're still frailties. I think, obviously, people now are having a look at Van Dijk. He will be highlighted to try and drag him into channels and get him in 1v1 situations. Trent Alexander-Arnold is obviously being highlighted. If the first thing when I think of when I think of Trent Alexander is when Mitrovic jumped over him at the back post and won an easy header, and Trent didn't even seem to realise he was there. So for me, I would be trying to hang balls up at the back post any time I could. His recovery runs, when you win it, just try and exploit him there. But look, I do think there'll be bigger tests. Liverpool did play better against Rangers, but the big test for me will be the next game against Rangers when they go up to Ibrox. And then you'll have to see the hybrid approach of whether the defenders, you know, just clear the lines, whether they try and overplay, because for the, you know, Anfield's a hostile atmosphere at the best of times, but going up to Ibrox, the home crowd will obviously be with Rangers. It'll just be a little bit hostile, and we'll see now if this 4-2-3-1 formation for Liverpool, it will be under the cosh next week, and I think that'll be a better gauge of how this will work going forward.
Yeah, what about Spurs? They are coming under a lot of criticism. They drew last night with Eintracht Frankfurt, and just a lot of criticism about their performance, or more their lack of performance. What do you think is going on with them? Like, I was reading one match report and it was quite interesting, just that there's a sense that they're just treading water and that they don't really know where they're going.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. You're treading water. And, you know, I've seen quite a lot of Eintracht Frankfurt, and I expect the Spurs to just go and just blow them out of water, you know, a 2-3 nil, because this Eintracht Frankfurt that got to the Champions League, that got beat by Rangers, that beat Rangers in the Europa League final, you know, a lot of them players have left. This is a very, very different Eintracht Frankfurt squad. So, you know, when you look at the likes of who you expect to win this, you know, you look at your Madrids, your Chelsea's, your Liverpool's, your Manchester City's, these would have all blew Eintracht Frankfurt out of the water. You know, it would have been a 4 or a 5 nil. And that's no disrespect to Frankfurt. In Champions League level, they're not great, but European level, they are a force to be reckoned with. So, you know, I expected Tottenham to be able to do it, but I felt we seen the difference between the likes of a Man City, a Bayern Munich, a Real Madrid, and Tottenham Hotspur. They just, you know, I think they had one shot on target in the whole 90 minutes of the game, which is usually disappointing. The one thing for me as well, that Emerson Royale started right back, given the red card he picked up against Arsenal during the weekend, I thought maybe Conte would have said, I'm going to have to play Matt Doherty because he's going to play in the next couple of Premiership games. But that didn't seem to be the case either. So that again had alarm bells ringing for me from an Irish point of view. But yeah, Spurs just didn't seem to take the game by the scruff of the neck. It felt like it was there for them to go and win, but yeah, just felt like they treaded water all night and, you know, just couldn't get over the line.
And I think especially when you see the players that they have, like, you would expect them to be able to create a lot more chances than they seemed to do last night at all. It just wasn't happening for them.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people think that if you can nullify Kane and Son and, you know, largely Richarlison as well, you will nullify Tottenham. You know, I thought Perisic played well, but, you know, he's a left wing back, he's aged, and he'll put an awful lot of quality into the box for you, but in terms of actually getting you a goal, it doesn't really happen. And I thought, you know, Frankfurt did well in the game, kept Son quiet, kept Kane quiet, really frustrated him, were quite physical with him overall in the game. And yeah, like I said, Spurs just, it felt like they had another gear to go, but they were, it just felt like they were happy to get out of there with a point, which is, you know, it's not the mentality you would believe that Conte would be filling them with before they go out there.
Yeah, and I guess the reality as well is that, like every English team now we see in the Champions League, we're going to be comparing them to Manchester City and we're going to be looking at the performance that they put in. They play Copenhagen this evening at 8 o'clock and you'd imagine they're just going to turn it on once again.
Yeah, you would have thought so. I think most people are already feeling a bit sorry for Copenhagen before this even kicks off, but I'm hearing a few whispers that maybe City may tone down their squad a little bit, just give a couple of lads a rest, because we all know they played in the derby on the weekend and that would have been high tempo, and although the game was done and dusted by half time, you know, emotionally it can drain you. And, you know, without being disrespectful to Copenhagen, I think Pep Guardiola and his team will think even a second string side should be able to beat Copenhagen. So I do think there will be a couple of changes tonight, but if that man Erling Haaland plays, you know, 14 goals in 8 games in the Premier League so far, it's just ridiculous, isn't it? He just needs to move to the next level. He's completed this one. It really is just too easy for them. And Phil Foden as well, a hat-trick also. And, you know, you look and think, how good can this Erling player be? He's so good. 3 goals in 2 games in the Champions League. It doesn't get any harder for him. And every test that comes up, he comes up against, every defender he comes up against, it just seems to be too easy for him. And with him in the team, you make Manchester City massive favourites for the Champions League. You just can't see anybody outscoring them.
Look, I know we've been there before, making Manchester City favourites for the Champions League, and they haven't done it, but this time it does feel different. It feels like they have that missing piece of the jigsaw. Chelsea are in action tonight against AC Milan too. Are we starting to pile a little bit of pressure on Graham Potter yet, do you think, or is it too soon? Oh, we've lost Keith. We're losing everybody today, but the good news is that Nadine Doherty is in studio with me to... Oh, you back again, Keith? No, we've lost Keith. Nadine Doherty is in studio with me and we can move on to ladies football for a few minutes. Nadine, good to have you in. Today was the announcement of the All-Stars, a culmination of a busy season for lots of people involved, and I always think it's good to have a look at them, and it kind of reminds me of all the good was that happened in the season and the great teams that we have as well.
Yeah, totally. And looking at the breakdown, as predicted, I suppose, Meath 13, Kerry 11, Donegal 6, Mayo 5, Armagh 4, Dublin 2, which we haven't seen in a long time, just 2, Cork 2, Galway 1 and Laois 1. But yeah, and that's the thing about the All-Stars, Marie. You know, if you ask any player, does the All-Stars mean anything to you or a nomination? You know, most players will say, no, they don't, and it's all about the team. But I think it's nice. You know, it is nice to acknowledge, as you said, that really the hard work. And it's a night out, and it's a chance of an All-Star trip to somewhere nice. So they'll all be delighted. Yeah, yeah.
Safe to say I've never been on one, so yeah.
That's was on one in Singapore way, way back. I'm actually embarrassed to say, I think it was nearly 20 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
gosh.
Yeah. But, you know, in fairness, the LGFA, they put on a great trip, and there's a lot of outreach when they're over there. You know, they'll check in with the local GA club, they'll be coaching, there'll be a lot of media work. So it's brilliant. And it is, it's a really lovely way to celebrate the year, as you said, and, you know, celebrate those players who are at the top.
Yep. So Meath are at the top of many things this year. They have a new manager there, so Davy Nelson is going to take over, and of course he has huge boots to fill.
Yeah, massive boots to fill. And you know, I suppose just to thank the outgoing Meath management, because they gave us some great, great times and great chats in here as well. We used to enjoy the Wednesdays, and Eamon used to always give us a few lines to work through, but huge boots to fill. But listen, Davy Nelson, I'll be honest, I hadn't heard of him because, you know, I wouldn't follow men's club football, but I mean, he has an excellent CV, 4 championships with his local Navan O'Mahony's club, a championship with Latin in Monaghan, and he's managed the Meath Junior and Under 21 sides. And Bernie Murray, a former Monaghan player, is also in with him, and they seem to come as a pair, because I was just chatting to a few people from Monaghan and Meath this evening, and they said that, you know, any word on the street is that any team Davy has taken, Bernie has been in with them. So that's a good sign as well. You know, there's stability there with the coaching team. And then you also have Mark Brennan staying on as strength and conditioning. And I think that can be a good thing, just to have that link from previous years. So it's all positive. Davy's involvement in ladies football, I'm not sure. Now, he does have a daughter who's around 16, I think, and she obviously plays at Navan O'Mahony, so perhaps he's dipped in and out of coaching, you know, throughout her fledgling career. But look, it's great, as you said, big boots to fill, but I'd say he's really excited. You know, he's going to be managing the All-Ireland champions. I mean,
that actually would fill me with dread now, having to take the All-Ireland champions. I'd prefer to take a team and build them up.
The only way is up. Yeah.
It's very hard when you're at the top, because the only way, unless you stay there, is down.
Yeah, and you know, he does have a tough job, because in terms of playing personnel, obviously we have the two girls in the AFLW who hopefully will be back for Meath. Emma Troy has confirmed she's gone travelling. And I didn't know.
A few holes now there.
A few holes. And I actually didn't know that Kelsey Nesbitt did her ACL. And she's getting her operation soon, I think. And then you have Aveen Leahy as well, who did her ACL in the finals. I mean, they're big shoes to fill in
that
sense.
The only thing is, though, it seems like they have been doing the right thing for a number of years. So they will, would hope, have the structures in place, have that conveyor belt coming through, have the personnel that they need to step up.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I was going to say. You know, it's a huge opportunity for other players on the squad and underage teams. I mean, I'd say there's a streamline, a conveyor belt of talent. And I suppose I would have been a little bit critical of the management last year, in that I felt they didn't use enough subs. They were, you know, they had their one or two that were guaranteed to come on. So huge opportunity. I'd imagine Davy will do trials. He'll unearth a load of new talent in Meath. So it's exciting. And I'd say other teams around the country are also excited with the change. So we'll see what happens.
Oh God, we turn to talk about the 3 in a row now.
Well, we have to.
Yeah.
You know, if it was Dublin, we have in the past. Cork, we have in the past. So absolutely, we have to with Meath. That will be their target.
Yeah.
You know, it has to be. So what's the space?
I was delighted to read and see pictures of Aisling Maloney back after her injury. Talk about somebody that is so synonymous with the game. And you know, time goes by and we didn't see her last year, and it's just brilliant to be looking forward to seeing her next year.
Absolutely. I saw the interview, or read the interview with the manager, the tip manager, and obviously he's excited at getting her back. But I missed talking about her last year, because what a player. Mm-hmm. You know, we were talking on Sunday Sport about creativity and spark and what have you. I mean, Aisling Maloney, What a player. So really, really looking forward to her coming back. And, you know, fair play to Tip last year, Marie. You know, they held firm. They survived the drop. You know, it was touch and go for them in that relegation playoff. And I think being senior this year would have been a huge motivation for Aisling herself probably to get back. So really excited to see her.
What about Donegal men's football? Have we any white smoke? Or are we any closer, do you think, to getting an official announcement?
Well,
plenty of speculation.
A lot of speculation. And I suppose with St Junan's getting to the county final there at the weekend, Rory Cavanagh's St Junan's, there was a focus on Rory and his name is coming up a lot. So if you are to believe the word on the street in Letterkenny and Donegal, it is going to be Rory. And apparently his coach is going to be Carl Lacey. So, I mean, what a ticket. Mm-hmm. It's hard to believe that those two guys won an All-Ireland 10 years ago.
Oh, wow.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, but looking at Rory and, you know, I know Rory, I played football with his sisters, an unbelievable football and family. We'd often argue that his sisters were actually better footballers than
how many
Rory,
sisters?
He has five sisters.
No way. Wow.
Oh, Madonna, Una, Trina. Four sisters, yeah. So Rory was the baby as well. But listen, you look at Rory and what he's done in St Junan's. I think it's close to 10 years since the club won a men's senior championship, which is huge for a club our size at home. So look, Rory has taken a group of really young players who achieved at minor and under 21. He is playing a defensive counter-attacking brand of football, so if he does take Donegal, I expect it to follow suit. But he has his team really fit. It's ball retention. Very tactically astute is Rory, and you know, Carl Lacey, obviously a wonderful coach. He's worked with teams in the past. Mm-hmm. He's been on other tickets before,
and I think he's involved as well with the underage.
So there's a good link there. So I hope, I really, really hope that the lads, that it is true that the lads are taking it, and I hope that they get 5 years. And what I'd hope is that they see out the 5 years and longer to really, really build, because I think that's what we need in Donegal.
Yeah,
you know, stability.
It does feel like that, alright. And I know it's late in the year, in just in relation to championship spin on and the split season and all the rest, but like Rory and Carl would be following the championship up there obviously every single game, they'd know it inside out, so it's not like they're going to be at a disadvantage or at a loss because they'll have missed matches or anything like that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Rory, I'd imagine he would have somebody watching every single championship game scouting for, you know, St Junan's and their tactics. They beat Kilkara last weekend, he'd have a huge insight. And you know, he played with some of the players who are still left.
Of course,
and
yeah.
You know, so he's, as you said, he's not at a disadvantage. He is perfectly placed, probably better placed than Declan Bonner would have been, in a sense, because he'll have those videos and he'll know who's who. So it's exciting.
He'll
hopefully
be so in tune with everything. Nadine, thank you so much for coming in. Now we are going to turn our attention to boxing. A story has been evolving all day, and that is about the Conor Benn and Chris Eubank Jr. fight, because it was announced that Eubank, or that Benn, had failed a drugs test for a substance known to increase testosterone a little bit earlier on. And this story went from there. Gavin Casey is with us to bring us through the events of the day. Gav, you may as well start at the start.
Yeah, I will do. Never a dull moment, Marie. I'll send through the gate so I can want to talk about boxing. to start, it was the Mail in the UK who broke this story this afternoon around 12 o'clock that Ben had produced an adverse finding in one of his tests that had been taken in either late August or early September by VADA, who is a voluntary anti-doping agency. And just to briefly outline how that was contextually pertaining to this fight, a fight between two British fighters in Britain with British boxing licenses, they would be subjected to UCAD testing, which is the UK anti-doping agency, which would be separate then to VADA testing, which is an opt-in. It's expensive. Basically, you work it into your contract. VADA can knock on your door and take a blood or urine sample at any point in the build-up to a fight, and it's basically designed as an extra protection against fighters who are doping. And it is a more, I suppose, scrutinous or magnifying test than what you would be subjected to by UCAT. And the result of this adverse finding, one would have presumed, would be that the fight would be automatically called off. But Ben and Eubank apparently had a conversation earlier today where Ben pled his case, insisted that he's a clean athlete. Eubank was taking into the fight a significant size advantage in that he's naturally by far the larger fighter. Eubank was campaigning around 160 to 168 pounds, whereas Ben is at 147 typically, and they're meeting somewhat in the middle at 157 at catch weight this Saturday. So clearly Eubank determining that the fight should go on is still confident that he retains the physical advantage regardless of what's going on in Ben's corner. Ben says that Eubank believes him, that he does believe Ben is a clean athlete. I suppose only Eubank really knows the truth of that. Now, since then, the British Boxing Board of Control, who would for all intents and purposes be sanctioning the fighter under whose supervision the fight would be taking place in the UK, have released a statement saying that the fight is prohibited because it's not in the best interests of boxing, and that now has led to a lot of legal discussions in the background which are ongoing between the Matchroom, between the promoters, Matchroom and Eddie Hearn, and the British Boxing Board of Control, who are trying to cancel what is ostensibly Eddie Hearn's fight.
Just getting a sense of public opinion on different social media platforms, it doesn't seem like people want this to go ahead now.
It would be, I would say it would not reflect well on really much any party involved in it if it does go ahead. And on the flip side of that, I think Eubank is within his rights to dictate or basically request that the fight does go ahead, because ultimately he will otherwise be walking away from £3 or £4 million, whatever he's been paid to take the fight, and he's put in probably a 10-week training camp in order to get himself in shape for it. He signed a contract which was meant to yield a significant windfall to him, and if he does walk away or if it is cancelled, that goes up in smoke. So I would sort of excuse him, but from the promotional standpoint, it's almost comical, really. We've heard Eddie Hearn in the past condemn opposing fighters or opposition fighters to his own Matchroom fighters for doping, guys who have failed tests, etc. And look, as soon as the shoe is on the other foot, almost predictably, he has turned heel or done a U-turn on his position on it. He maintains Ben's innocence, whereas with some of those opposition fighters in the past, he wouldn't have. And he is very intent on getting this fight done. It's a very important fight, I would say, for Matchroom and for their broadcasting deal with DAZN. It's a pay-per-view fight. It would have been worked into budgets, etc. at this point, or financial forecasts, at least. And again, if it is pulled, it causes a lot of disruption on the promotional and broadcasting side of things as well. So that's probably where he's coming from, where the public is coming from, or let's say the majority of people that you and I have seen online. It's probably that you just don't want to see a fighter around whom there are now significant question marks take to the ring, potentially artificially enhanced by a banned sub.
Yeah, that's for sure. And there's, of course, an Irish interest as well on this fight. A young Irish boxer, is it Conor Coyle?
Conor Coyle.
Is set to be fighting this weekend as well, but that's obviously in doubt as well.
Yeah, he was going to be fighting a really top British prospect by the name of Felix Cash. But Hearn has said publicly already that if the main event is pulled, the whole card will be pulled. Like, this card is predicated upon two sons of British boxing legends meeting in the middle, and that has been the promotional mechanism the Matchroom have used to push the entire event, and it would probably feel illogical to stage the card without, because they would have insurance in place if they have to pull the event, but if you continue with the undercard alone, you probably have to take it off pay-per-view. It costs a lot of money. You make a big loss. So it's just impractical, I would imagine, from their point of view.
And Gav, just finally, it was announced earlier today that the International Boxing Association, the IBA, has lifted its ban on amateur boxers from Russia and Belarus over the war in Ukraine, the one that had been in place since early March. I guess it was inevitable, really, Gav, wasn't it?
Yeah, inevitable in the sense that IBA, now the world governing body for amateur boxing, is, for all intents and purposes, in Russia's pocket. They're dependent on sponsorship on an annual basis from Gazprom, which is the Russian state's energy provider. Their president, Umar Kremlev, is a Russian. He was recently pictured alongside Vladimir Putin at the launch of a boxing center in Moscow. He has taken the organization on a, I would say, troublesome path away from the Olympics. It's not currently on the slate for the 2028 Games in L.A., he's been quite confrontational towards the IOC. It looks like boxing is going to be removed from the Olympics altogether very soon. And look, it should be noted as well that only 2 weeks ago, IBA decided to suspend the Ukrainian Boxing Federation for what I would have said was fairly frivolous and vague reasons. I think there's a lot of geopolitics at play there, and I think that's been unveiled further in the sense that Russia and Belarus have been brought back into the fold under Russian presidency.
Okay, well, Gav, Katie Taylor is fighting on the 29th of October, so maybe the next time we're chatting, it'll be about something positive.
It usually is with Katie, to be fair.
I hope so. Gav, thank you so much for that. We'll check in with you again very soon.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. It is halftime in those two early Champions League games. Celtic are still trailing RB Leipzig 1-0, and RB Salzburg and Dinamo Zagreb are 0-0. We are now going to turn our attention to the story of Paul Nagel, who has announced today that he is retiring from the World Rally Championship after Rally Catalonia later this month. The 44-year-old currently sits with Craig Breen in the M Sport run Ford Puma on the WRC. He has 5 WRC wins under his belt after his time with Chris Meek at Citroën. And a little bit earlier, he spoke to John Kenny, and John asked him about his decision to retire.
It felt right at this time of the year. I think after we finished second place in Sardinia with Craig, I found it a tough rally, tough event, and I decided maybe this year was the time to go instead of next year. I have a contract in the next year, but I'm not getting any younger, 44 years of age. I'm racing a lot of young fellas now, and we know Callie Robin-Pierre was just world champion there a couple of days ago. He's only 22, so it just feels right. My kids are at an age that I like to spend more time at home with them, and my wife and everything has put her whole life on hold as well for the last 10 years. And for me, I've given my whole life, last 20 odd years, to motorsport. And I think it was time to hang up the helmet, really.
Now, I'm delighted to say that John Kenny joins me on the line. John did that interview with Paul Nagel. John, what kind of a legacy will he leave?
Well, I think he's one of the greatest sportsmen, international sportsmen we've ever had. He's competed in over 100 World Rally Championship rounds. He sat with the likes of Chris Meek, where he won 5 rounds for Citroën, the likes of Andreas Mikkelsen, also with Gareth McHale, who won the Irish Championship back in 2006. They finished 6th in Mexico, and obviously more recently with Craig Breen. Now, they're obviously the unsung heroes of rally driving. Nobody really hears a lot about co-drivers, but they have to be as fit and as alert as the driver as well, because it is a two-pronged attack between driver and co-driver as well. He's 44 years of age. He's been around the scene since 2004. His neighbour and friend, Donny O'Sullivan, invited him to go to Rally Catalunya in 2004 and compete in the World Rally Championship in a Ford Focus, and he's been on the scene ever since. And he does have another year of a contract to run with M Sport, because they signed a 2-year deal, himself and Craig Breen. But I just think he's getting too tired of it. Mm-hmm. The new generation cars have the exhaust coming down by where the co-driver sits, so that's getting it even hotter in the car. So I think he's probably right that Paul hangs up his helmet now at this stage.
It was interesting hearing him speaking about the age and the fact that he's 44 and some of the co-drivers are 22. That's a lot of years in between him and some of the other competitors.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the new World Rally Champion is a guy called Robin Pera. He's just gone 22. New hot shoe on the block. You know, Craig is in his 30s now. Hasn't yet won a round of the World Championship. He's always come close a couple of times. Finished second in Estonia and finished third in Monte Carlo earlier on this year. He was leading in New Zealand actually before they went off. So they've had a lot of accidents as well recently. And Paul Nagel was involved in some huge crashes with Chris Meek as well. So that all takes its toll as well. You're ending upside down in a car or out in the middle of nowhere, the safari rally and the car breaking down and things like that. So it does take its toll. It's a World Rally Championship. He's got to be away from his family a lot, from Killarney. It's a lot of travelling. Like, he's just done 36 hours back from New Zealand to home. Then he'll be out to Spain and then on to Japan as well. I know he's not competing in that, but he's going to be there to give words of wisdom to the new co-driver that Breen's going to pick up for them. But I'll say he'll be around the scene working in some department in World Rally, because we certainly need him.
Well, as you know, motor racing isn't my area of expertise. Are co-drivers hard to get?
I've done a bit of co-driving, and you really have to trust the driver. That's the one thing. Mm-hmm. You really have to build up a relationship with the driver that is 100%, that the driver is going to do exactly what you tell him to do, because you will recce a stage, you'll make the pace notes, and the driver is him driving the car along with what he sees. He's listening to the co-driver telling him what's coming up, left, right, K, right, centre, you name it. So there's got to be total trust in the car. So yeah, co-drivers are difficult to find, and ones you can trust are certainly difficult to find.
So what will Craig Breen do now?
Craig will get a new co-driver for Japan, and part of that interview as well, you might see it up online too, is that Paul is absolutely convinced, even though that Breen has had one or two problems recently in the World Rally Championship, that he will be on the World Championship scene as the lead driver with M Sport next year. He says he's going through a difficult time at the moment. All rally drivers do. It just so happens that it's happening to Craig Breen at the moment. But he will have a new co-driver for Rally Japan, and another one as well, or maybe the same person, we don't know, for the start of the new championship, which will be January next year in Monte Carlo.
Okay. John Kenny, thank you so much.
You're
for
welcome.
Chatting to me and for that interview as well. And as John says there, it can be found online. Michael Corcoran now has joined me in the studio to talk rugby. Michael, the emerging Ireland team were facing off against the Pumas. It's not over that long. How did it go for Ireland?
They won.
You know now, Michael, your job's done.
I can go away now, can I? Yeah. They won by 28 points to 24. It was a tough game. The background to this really is it's obviously a brand new team. They brought a pretty big squad to give them some game time over the course of all the matches that they're playing. So this is the team's first time playing in a match together. Now they had a really good start. They led 21 points to nil after 16 minutes of the game. Shea Mullins, the fullback, Jake Flannery with tries, with James Culhan, who got a try in the first half and got a try in the second half as well, actually put them in a good position, 21-0. The one thing I will say about this is that this tournament that they're playing in is being played in Bloemfontein in South Africa. It's at altitude, and most teams get caught, for want of a better phrase, with their fitness, with their breathing, with their decision making and everything like that after about 55-60 minutes of the game. And Ireland were under a bit of pressure. They had chances to put even more daylight between the two teams coming towards half time. They kicked for touch when maybe they should have kicked points, basically. They threw away 6 points really coming towards half time. That after the Pumas had got two tries coming towards half time to bring them sort of right back into the game. So 21-12 at half time. And they were in a position like where, you know, they conceded two further tries within the space of 5 or 6 minutes in the second half to make the game a lot tighter than it should have been. James Culhan did get his second try after 53 minutes, but they got two tries in the space of 5 minutes for 28-24, and they were hanging on, to be fair about it, in the closing stages of the match, like an intercept, and all of a sudden the Pumas could have got a try to win the game.
Are you a fan of the experiment, the Emerging Ireland experiment?
Rather strangely, I am, actually, to be fair about it, because it's given the players an opportunity to get involved in something that they normally wouldn't be involved in. And they're also in a situation where they are training with the majority of the Ireland senior coaching team, with the exception of Andy Farrell. So it gives them a chance to showcase what they can do up close and personal for a period of 2.5-3 weeks in South Africa, with a view to them playing and being involved in the game against the New Zealand 15 at the RDS, you know, the night before the game against South Africa as well too. Because at the end of the day, like, we don't want to be, and we have been in a situation the last number of World Cups that I've been to where we've been bemoaning the fact that we don't have strength and depth at position, whatever, whether it's out half or prop or second row, or this fella's injured, that fella's suspended, and we've nobody with enough experience to come through. Well, this is an opportunity for people to show what they can do. Now, a very, very young squad, to be perfectly fair about it, today. Cormac Azichuga was very good. Jake Flannery played well in patches. Scott Penny was very good. He was a late replacement for John Hodnett, who's out with a knee injury. Scott Penny was very, very good. I think he's an excellent player, and James Culhan was excellent too as well. So it's a chance for people like that to experience something different And I was on a call yesterday with Mike Catt, and I asked him the very question about the value of this competition, whether it was a good thing or otherwise. Now, he's obviously going to say it is a good thing because he's out there. but he did say, ask any of the players and they'll tell you they want to be there, and it's an opportunity for them. You know, that's the reality. I know the other side of it is people will say, what about, the provinces and the United Rugby Championship? It's just gone hand in hand at the moment. It's a bit of short-term pain, I think, for long-term gain. And I think, it's good to see players get exposed in a situation like this where they can play games at a pretty decent level.
Now, speaking of short-term pain, I saw a lot of people moaning the fact it was taking a long time to play this game.
Yeah, it was another 1 hour, first half. I was in Musgrave Park last Saturday for a game that started at 5:05, and the referee blew the halftime whistle just before 5:06. I mean, that was another nearly 1 hour scenario there as well, where we're getting stuff now being checked and double checked. And can you tell me, is that a knock on, or is there any reason why, or did you kind of, you know, this isn't, I mean, we had a farcical situation during the course of the first half of this game where they were trying to pick out a clip where there might have been a potential knock on in the lead up to one of the tries for the South African team. And they couldn't find it, but the television match official was explaining to the referee what the clip was, and the referee said, well, if I can't see the clip, I can't disallow the try. That's the reality about it. No, they found it, and it was a minuscule thing, to be fair about it, but it's taken so long double checking all of these things, and we have approached a scenario where a half of rugby is going to be an hour at this stage. So God help us if any of the matches in November have a late kickoff. I think one or two of them have. We could be there till midnight, to be perfectly fair about it, if it continues. It's just ridiculous. I don't see, particularly in a competition like this where there's nothing really at stake. Okay, there's a bit of prize money at the weekend if they went on to win the competition, but this isn't the Rugby World Cup. That's the reality about it. And to be delaying matches, and it was incredible actually how everything was checked in the first half of the match. And then in the second half, obviously somebody had a word with someone at half time because there's another match following this one. And they were sort of going, listen, pal, if you want to hurry up there because we're going to miss the kickoff time for the second game. You know what I mean? It was a back-to-back situation. So I just think the whole thing needs to be kept in check, to be fair.
Yep, I agree with you, as always, Michael Corcoran. And thanks very much for coming in. That is all we have time for. There is a competition winner. Niall O'Brien from Offaly has sent in the correct answer, the Republic of Ireland. Right, well, Betta Da Silva is up next, and we are out of here. We'll be back tomorrow, though, with plenty of sport to chat about. RTE 2FM.